Welcome to this special hour-long edition of the Campbell Conversations, a debate among the four candidates for mayor of the city of Syracuse. I'm Grant Reher, and I'll be the moderator for tonight's debate. Joining me are the Democratic nominee, Juanita Perez-Williams, Republican nominee, Laura Levine, Green Party nominee, Howie Hawkins, and Ben Walsh, who's running as an independent and appearing on the ballot on the Independence, Reform, and Upstate Jobs party lines. I want to thank all of you for making the time to speak with me today.
Thanks for having us.
Thank you. Thank you so much.
A brief note on our format. This is a debate, but it's structured more as a group conversation that will emphasize differences where they exist. I will often direct a question to one candidate and then provide an opportunity for others to disagree. There are no opening or closing statements, and there is no timer on each response, but I'll make sure that each candidate gets a fair chance to participate. I've also asked each candidate to be brief and to try to answer the question posed, and I may intervene if they are not. A reminder that each of the candidates has been interviewed individually for the Campbell Conversations, and I encourage our listeners wanting to dig deeper into any or all of the candidates they're about to hear from in this debate to check out those interviews on the Campbell Conversations page at wrvo.org under the Local Programming tab. Some of my questions today are derived from those individual conversations, and indeed, on that note, let me pose the first question. To the best of my knowledge, and to my ears anyway, I've only heard one of the four of you put forward specific concrete proposals for raising additional revenues for the city outside of setting aside the desire to see the city more effectively lobby for money from the state or other entities. And that one person to put forward concrete proposals for raising additional revenues is Howie Hawkins. So, Howie, if you could, very briefly to set the stage here, set forward the new revenue-generating mechanisms that you're proposing and why they're necessary.
Well, I'm proposing a progressive city income tax as a more sustainable and a broader and a fairer revenue tax base for the city. I mean, I've been saying I want to be the next mayor of Syracuse, not its last mayor. We're on the brink of insolvency. We could face a state-imposed financial control board, which would dissolve the city or could dissolve the city into the county metro government like the consensus proposal put forward without us having much say in it. And if we don't solve this fiscal problem, everything else we say is beside the point because the next mayor will be the last mayor. So this city income tax, we need to get home rule from the state. So it's a political question. How do you build a coalition of municipalities across the state to support home rule where the cities, besides Yonkers and New York, which do have an income tax, need home rule on the income tax? And I think also you mentioned state aid. Revenue sharing in the state has been, it used to be 8% of state revenues in the late 70s. Now it's 0.5%, and they're not paying for their mandates on local government. The least the state should do is pay for its own programs. That will help us. So a broader, fairer, more sustainable tax base would be based on income, both state income for the revenue sharing and then a local tax that would be not just on residents but on commuters and absentee landlords as well.
So, Ben Walsh, does the city need to raise additional revenues somehow?
We do indeed. I have a number of proposals that I think will help with that issue. One area that I think there's a real opportunity that hasn't been spoken about much is the amount of surplus property that the city owns. There are a lot of old school buildings that are currently no longer in use. The city owns garages, parking garages, and in my experience, the city has not been an effective property owner. And those properties provide us an opportunity to generate revenue both in the short term in terms of sales or leases, also in the long term in terms of property taxes. Those properties are not currently on the tax rolls.
But you're not proposing any new taxes then? Get clear on that.
I think we need to look real hard at our water rates, especially in light of the recent situation with the algae in Skaneateles Lake. Our water infrastructure is critical. We know it's in desperate need of repair. I understand that we did recently increase water rates, but I think we need to look again at water rates in light of recent information.
And Laura Levine, do you see a problem with either what Howie Hawkins has proposed in terms of a progressive income tax or what Ben Walsh is talking about in terms of the water rates? Do you see problems there?
Only a little more than half of our properties are on the tax rolls. What our problem is, in my view, is that not enough people want
to live in the city of Syracuse, buy homes here. If we had a more desirable city in which to live, where people would choose to live, work, and go to school, more of those places would be on the tax rolls. We would be generating. Increasing, for example, real estate taxes isn't really going to hit the mark. If we increase our real estate taxes by 1%, that's going to generate somewhere in the vicinity of $400,000. It's not going to do it enough for us. We really need to turn the whole city around and make it a more desirable place to live.
Okay, and Juanita Perez-Williams, if similar question to what I just asked Laura Levine, but if we don't use the measures that Hallie Hawkins is talking about, and I think on a smaller scale what Ben Walsh is talking about, are we left with just as citizens hoping that whoever gets elected among the four of you is going to be able somehow to leverage more money from the state? I mean, is that what we're putting all our hope on?
Well, I think it's, you know, a mixture of things. I mean, both of them, you know, have good ideas. But at the end of the day, we have to talk short term and we have to talk long term. And as Corporation Counsel, I recall this being the issue again when we began the term with Mayor Minor 8 years ago. And I was one of the few leads in the city that took that as a serious request. And we immediately began to figure out ways to hone in on collecting thousands of dollars with regard to revenue on judgments that we have for collections, whether it's water, whether it's housing, whether it's code enforcement. We have all these attorneys, and no one was thinking about the ways to move forward quickly on raising revenue with the very judgments that we have in court that are just sitting there because no one's enforcing them. So we need to be creative, short term. We can do that with collections. We can do that with codes enforcement. We have codes enforcement that could be quickly outsourced to assist the county and the region, and we could raise revenue by utilizing what they provide to towns and villages. We could do this with our own asphalt and paving system that we have been talking about, really collecting millions of dollars, if you will, by utilizing that resource we have in our own city. We spend dollars to pave our streets. We put them on the tax rolls for individuals in our city. We could do that ourselves and begin to collect on revenues. Again, we need to speak short-term, we need to speak long-term, but we need to have a mixture of ideas and not make people feel that we have to focus on any type of raising taxes.
So, Hallie Hawkins, are you hearing anything here that you think is going to get the job done revenue-wise? Because what we're, and Laura Levine, you introduced a bigger topic that I want to come back to later. But are you hearing anything in terms of the revenue side that you think is going to get us where the city needs to be?
I am not. And I think the only fiscally responsible thing to do is raise $15 to $20 million more. That's the structural deficit we're facing. And we've got to do that, like, in the next year. Otherwise, we're insolvent, and the state may impose that financial control board. And I think 1% of the city payroll, which is about $3 billion, is $30 million. You have a graduated income tax. Low income would be exempt, maybe go up to a top bracket of 1.5% for people making six figures. It'd be graduated in between. And an average 1% yield would yield $30 million a year. Okay. That would cover the gap. There are other things the state could do. If they pass single-payer health care, the city would save $80 million.
Well, I want to focus on the things that Syracuse can do. So that's a
well,
that's
we're
a
one vote
one.
Away in the state Senate from okay. that passing, and Cuomo said he likes the idea recently. So that's another possibility. But we got to find something in the next year, really.
So let me pose the question then back to the three of you on this. And any of you who want to jump in, go ahead. But is the situation as dire as Hallie Hawkins has just presented it? He's saying we need a fair amount of money right away or else we're going to face insolvency. Is he right about that?
Clearly he's right about that, but at the end of the day, you
this
know.
This is Juanita Perez.
Right. We only, you know, we have to get to short-term solutions and the long-term solutions, but even short-term, our relationships with the state government, we'll be able to repair them right away when I am mayor and talk about the resources that we can get from the state. We have missed huge opportunities with the lack of relationships that we have now. Clearly, there's no dispute that that has impacted this city. So speaking short-term on some of the ideas I've talked about, speaking long-term with trying to ensure that we're focusing on areas like tourism and what we'll get out of 81. There are ways that we can do this. Yes, we need to do it quickly, but it is not hopeless, and we should not put our city thinking that, in fact, there are no answers and that it's hopeless.
Okay. And I know I I know that Ben Walsh and Laura Levine both wanted to get on this. So, Laura, go ahead. Tell me what did you
There are debates about whether or not certain employees should be required to have residency in the city of Syracuse, school teachers, officers. Why are we even having a city that has to require residency? There's something wrong when we have to make people live in the city where they work. We should have a city that is a desirable place to live, where people choose to live. Raising taxes is not going to be an incentive for people to move into the city.
And Ben Walsh, your last word on this, and we'll move on to another topic.
Well, just that I agree that we are in a dire situation, and we are fiscally unsustainable. In my platform, Syracuse Rising, I'm proposing that we pull together a fiscal policy summit at the very beginning of the administration. I worked in City Hall for 6 years under the current administration. I can tell you that there is no silver bullet. We've turned over all the stones. The only way that we can get ourselves out of this in the short term is to identify some revenue-generating opportunities, also to ask for help and to develop the relationships and nurture the relationships at the county, state, and federal level that help us to do that. But in the long term, I do think that we need to think about growth encourage industry and business to set up shop here in Syracuse and to grow here, because long term we're going to need that if we want to continue to be sustainable.
Yeah, I definitely want to come back and cover that topic just a little bit later in the program. Let me switch now, though, to a different issue, which is I-81, and this is an important issue. It's been covered a lot. You've all been interviewed on the topic in the past. So let me summarize in a couple sentences what I understand to be your positions on this, and then I have a different kind of question that I want to try to pose here. So I believe that all of you, except for Laura Levine, are in favor of a community grid option. And Laura, I understand that you are in favor of a hybrid community grid and tunnel or depressed highway. So is that basically correct?
Yes,
voices of dissent? Okay, so here's my question then about I-81. And Juanita Perez-Williams, I'll direct it to you. Let's say that you're mayor, all right, and the decision comes down from the state. Maybe it'll be delayed again, so it will be after that time period when you've taken the oath of office. So the decision comes down from the state that the elevated highway is going to be replaced with another elevated highway. All right, that's the decision. What do you do then as leader of the city? What would you do?
Well, I'm going to assume that we have an opportunity to respond back. I'm going to assume that as a city we'll have the opportunity to offer our input and why that wouldn't work for the city of Syracuse. And why is that? Because we know we have a highway now that has divided the city. It has caused a spiraling down, if you will, with relationships in our city, with business in our city, and clearly with economic development. So I'm going to offer to you that as a mayor, I would stand up and I would continue to argue that we need to focus on a street scenario, that we need to focus on the ability to create new tax revenue, raise our property values, and rebuild a urban core, not only on a street scenario that would replace 81, but our additional corridors that are now created in ways where it's difficult for development
or
industry.
I understand, and that's the argument for the community grid that you and others have made, but I wanted to focus on this what-if question. So, Ben Walsh, you've got your hand up, and the question to the rest of the three of you is, do you have contingency plans in mind for something like this, should it happen? I mean, it's not necessarily the case that you're going to get what it is that you think we should get.
Well, one of the points of frustration I know for me and many in the community is that I suspect that proposing to build a new bridge won't be a viable option, because I suspect that the draft environmental impact statement is gonna say what we all know, which is that would have a significant negative impact on the community. The frustration is that the state hasn't released the draft environmental impact study. It was supposed to be done at the end of this summer, as was the tunnel study, and yet here we are still waiting for that information. Those of us that have been paying attention to this issue and involved in this issue for a long time know that the community grid is the right option for the city. It's time for us to stop studying, to stop analyzing. We have a paralysis of analysis here. We need to get the information in front of us, confirm what we already know, that the community grid is the right option, and we need to move that forward. And if the state disagrees with that, then we're going to have a conversation. I'm going to stand up for this city and continue to call for a community grid.
Is anybody hearing anything they disagree with that they'd want to add to.
I agree that we need to get the information in front of us, and I don't think we have all the information that we need. I'm interested in seeing the results of the independent study, including the environmental impact study. And worst-case scenario, I would do what I have always done as a leader, which is to stand up for my stakeholders and make the case for what's in their best interest.
That was Laura Levine. I'm Grant Reher, and you're listening to a special edition of the Campbell Conversations, a debate among the four candidates for Syracuse mayor.
And the fourth candidate didn't get to comment on the question.
Fourth candidate, go right ahead. That would be Howie Hawkins. Go ahead, sir.
If they made the dumb decision to rebuild that elevated viaduct, I would fight back.
Okay.
It creates more traffic jams than a grid does. That's prime real estate for the city that can expand the property base, which is a long-term answer to some of our fiscal problems. It has divided the community. My contingency plan is focused on how we do the community grid right. It needs to be mixed income, mixed use. Syracuse Housing Authority, south of Adams, has got plans in that direction. My question is, what are we going to do about north of Adams? The city needs to be involved there so it doesn't become an upscale gated community and segregated from the rest of the city. So I'm focused on how we do the community grid right.
So let me stick with this topic of, I guess, resistance to a decision that one doesn't like and you don't think it's best for the city. Under the current mayoral administration, the city has taken on a very public resistance to President Donald Trump. So, Ben Walsh, let me start with you on this one. Are we at about the right level of pushback here? Should we go further? Should we dial this back? Is this the appropriate thing to be happening at the city level and get the attention that it does from the city administration?
I'm always going to stand up for what's right and what's most important for the city of Syracuse. I think that the key is to make sure you do it in a respectful way. I think the problem that we've had in this community with some of our leadership is that not just that they disagree, but that they walk away from the table. When I disagree with someone, I sit down across the table from them, I look them in the eye, and I explain why I disagree, and I hope to work towards a compromise. And more often than not, my experience, a compromise is there to be had. When it's not, you get up, you walk away, but you come back to the table. That's the problem right now in this community. Our leaders are not at the table, and I have a track record of bringing people to the table to get things done. That's what I'll do as mayor.
Juanita Perez-Williams, do you think that this resistance to the president is a distraction from things that we should be focusing on this
year? No, I think we need to be focusing on all issues at all levels. I mean, local politics are so important now to ensure that when we have concerns as a city, as a region, that we stand up to our federal government and to what's being pushed back. But what I'll offer to you is simply this. I have done this before. I have done this as a leader in the city of Syracuse. 8 years ago, we didn't have time to think about this issue. We didn't have the luxury of putting together task force and what have you. We had to close a highway down within a two-hour span. The city had a building that was falling over. We were concerned about it falling onto 81. The mayor gave me the authority to be at the helm of how we were going to do this. I reached out to Governor Patterson. We quickly closed 81 with Frank Fowler and Pete O'Connor from DPW. We created easy ingress into the city for the 60,000 people that come in and get out. We did it seamlessly. There were no complaints. And at the end of the day, it was the state that took the cost with regard to bringing this building down that we were all very consumed over. But we demonstrated the ability to get people in and out of the city without a major highway like 81. And we did it in a way where we didn't, again, have time to plan, and yet few complaints, well, few concerns, and it worked.
Let me jump in, though, on this. And I want to come back to this issue because it's a question of where leadership spends its time and attention. So, Laura Levine, what's your take on this? Has the city spent too much time worrying about President Trump's policies?
The Census Bureau revealed last week that the national poverty rate decreased to 12%, but Syracuse's increased from 31 to 32+%. We went from being the 29th most impoverished city in the country to the 13th most impoverished city in the country. Syracuse is on the wrong track. We need a leader who focuses on what our residents need and not be distracted by anything else. House Speaker Tip O'Neill said all politics is local politics. As a leader, I will be focused solely on what's in the best interest of the residents of the city and turning the place around.
Okay, and Howie Hawkins, any other thoughts on that question?
I think this is a time for progressive federalism. municipalities and states in our system have enormous powers, and Trump is hopeless. I mean, I think we should protest him, but not lose our focus on what we can do locally. And then the question becomes, how do you build the coalitions to get changes at state policy? I ran against Cuomo twice. There are about 10 issues where he was on the other side. He's now on my side. $15 minimum wage, millionaires tax, the ban on fracking. And I believe in terms of getting the state aid we need to municipalities. When I ran for governor, I was getting calls from rural Republican town councilors saying, this property tax cap and the lack of revenue sharing is killing us too. And I think we can build a coalition and then go to Cuomo and not shame him, but say, hey, here's your opportunity to be the hero and reduce property taxes across the state and let local communities decide their own priorities. I think that's politically feasible. And rather than worrying about what Trump's doing too much, we should focus on what we can do at the local and state level.
All right. And Laura Levine, let me come back to you with this next question. During the Democratic primary debate that we had here on the Campbell Conversation, which obviously you aren't part of as the Republican nominee, but we spent quite a bit of time discussing the problem of poverty in Syracuse, and you just brought it up, and the different facets of it. And you, in my individual conversation with you, you emphasize crime very heavily as a key factor, not only in the effort to address poverty, but also as a key to the improvement of the school system, too. You saw these things as linked. And so I was wondering if you could sketch out for our listeners the connection that you see there between the problem of crime, as you understand it, in the city, and these other two big issues of poverty and the school system. And what can be done, then, about crime that isn't being done at present?
We had a record homicide rate last year. 31 people died on our streets. I don't relish being able to say what we've all heard this week, which is that two more homicides were committed this week. Again, we're on the wrong track. When you knock on the doors and talk to the people who live in Syracuse, far and away, the top two concerns are the school system and crime. That's 90% of what I hear. What can you do about the schools? What can you do about the crime? They're connected. Does crime lead to poverty? Does poverty lead to crime? There is a relationship. Whether it's cause and effect is almost immaterial. But with the concentration we have of poverty, and that's different from situational poverty, the key to turning the city around is to improve the schools. And that means that we have to do something about a 60% graduation rate. Yes, it's increased. We want to be celebrating that increase. But that means that 40% of our students are either graduating late or they're dropping out altogether. The way to be successful in terms of breaking out of the poverty, and the research shows if you're beyond your third generation of poverty, it's extremely difficult to extract yourself from that. We need to make sure that our students graduate from high school on time with adequate post-secondary plans so that they have the skills necessary. Do we need to bring more jobs to Syracuse? Yes, but we actually have jobs in Central New York. We have manufacturing jobs that aren't getting filled because the potential employees don't have the right skills for those jobs. So we have to make sure people have the right skills for the jobs that are available, bring more jobs in. We have an understaffed police department. One of my opponents said, police don't prevent crime. I could not disagree more. We don't have enough officers in order to implement true community policing. And by that, I mean officers who know the names of the youth, who knock on the doors of the businesses. How are you today? What's going on? So that people won't be afraid to call the police, which they are now. And the police acknowledge it. It's difficult when we get calls and there's so few of us. We swoop in. We take somebody. We don't have the opportunity to build rapport and relationships. All of these things are connected. We need a fully staffed police department with true community policing that knows where the concentration of crimes are committed, because crimes are committed in concentrated places, and they need to be able to be tasked to address all of those issues. Those are connected to poverty, connected to education, all triangulating.
Juanita Perez-Williams, does Syracuse have a crime problem as severe as Laura Levine is painting it to be?
We do have a crime problem at all levels. But as you pointed out, it is truly a result of poverty. And until we focus on poverty, we are always going to have a crime problem. whether it's minor crime, which many of our neighborhoods are talking about, and the many doors that I knocked on, that's all I hear is, when are we going to deal with the issues involving someone breaking into my car, you know, someone involved in vandalism? There's a concern for that. Why? Because there is very little response, and there's very little voice that's provided to communities. So until we focus on poverty, we're going to continue to have it. So you need to focus on poverty. And when I talk about crime, what I talk about is how we deter it. How we deter it, of course, involves dealing with the issues of making sure our young people have options, that we're focusing on activities before and after school, that we're dealing with ways to put people to work. That said, when it comes to dealing with crime, in addition to the factors of focusing on poverty, we have to make sure, as my opponent has said, that we are looking at community policing options. What I have said is that more police are not going to stop the many crimes that we have in our city. We know that many cities the same size as Syracuse have less police officers per capita. So what is the response? The response is to ensure that we are deterring crime. We deter it by focusing on poverty. We deter it by focusing on community policing. We deter it by ensuring that people in this community know that their neighborhoods are being looked after and that we are caring for their very needs. So when we talk about crime, we must focus on poverty, but we must focus on ways additionally to deter crime from occurring.
Hallie Hawkins, what's your take on this? The extent of crime as a problem, its connection to these other large problems, and then the police issue that has been introduced here.
Well, high crime as well as underperforming or struggling schools in Syracuse and across the country over decades of research, those things happen when you have concentrated poverty. Concentrated poverty means the poor are segregated. We have hyper-segregation in Syracuse and in the metro region. So I think the next mayor should focus resources and policies on uplifting poor and working class people. That will reduce crime. It will help the problems in the schools, city become more attractive to middle class people, and businesses and everybody can prosper. In terms of immediate priorities, we have 260 people on the city payroll that make over $100,000 a year. One is the mayor. There's some upper-level firefighters, and the rest are police officers. They're expensive. They can catch criminals, but in terms of deterring crime, the only crime that's been going up over the last two decades is youth shootings. We ranked sixth since 2014 to June of this year. It was in the USA Today and AP study. And these are young people that are disconnected, and they're shooting each other over status, respect, and revenge. They need help. And for one police officer, you can get three outreach workers on the street working with these people. And then at the tail end, like we have the Syracuse Truce Program, the cops go to these guys and say, you know, if you do something wrong, we're going to get you. But here, call this number. You call that number, there's not many resources for those kids. I think we should go to the Upstate Revitalization Initiative with a Marshall Plan for the city to rebuild our high poverty census tracts and neighborhoods. And that should include public jobs. So at-risk youth, as well as people coming back from incarceration, can get a job record, and get into the larger labor market. So the focus needs to be on fighting the crime, and then that will help fighting the poverty, and then the crime and school problems will be easier to solve.
Ben Walsh, I saw you nodding your head vigorously at several different points. What would you add here?
I think there are a lot of good points there. It's about poverty. That's the issue. When you look at our school district and you look at other school districts, there's almost a direct correlation between median income level and academic achievement. Our kids are coming into the classrooms with so many barriers ahead of them, whether it's the lead that they're being poisoned by in their homes, whether it's the fact that they're hungry. We have to deal with the root causes of poverty. It is about housing and segregation, and we need to deal with those issues head on. It is about jobs. We need to create jobs, not only career opportunities for people, but we have to engage young people and get them opportunities, give them reasons to not be on the street. I am proposing a youth jobs program, partnering with local businesses, creating internships. It's about poverty.
I'm Grant Reher, and I'm moderating a debate among the four candidates for Syracuse mayor: Independent Ben Walsh, Green Party candidate Howie Hawkins, Republican Laura Levine, and Democrat Juanita Perez-Williams. The election is November 7th. Well, where we broke off was wrestling with this enormous problem that the city is facing, and I think all of you collectively did a wonderful job of explaining how interconnected these problems of crime and poverty, education, and economic opportunity for the future are all linked. And so I want to try to continue to unpack that and get at it this way. And Ben Walsh, I'll come back to you with this. So Syracuse's economy, it seems to me when you look at it, is at this point, it's education. It's driven by education and medicine, and then some light and specialty manufacturing, and then some services. So how do we... And then you have the concentrated poverty that Howie Hawkins was describing in detail. So that's the situation. So how do you take those two things together and try to create something going forward that's going to provide more opportunity for more people and turn the city around? It seems quite daunting. I mean, Howie Hawkins before was talking about this Marshall Plan. So he's invoking some pretty strong metaphors there for what we need to do. How do you see this working in terms of our future economic development?
Yeah, these issues are inextricably connected. You mentioned some of our assets. We do have educational medical institutions here that are large employers, but maybe more importantly, are regularly turning out talented young people that we need to keep in this community. It's a lot easier to help a business grow or to get a business started if someone has already made the conscious decision to be here, rather than go out and try to find a silver bullet in some other community. So we have to do a better job. And in my experience in economic development, the most effective way is to engage businesses that are already here, identify what their barriers to growth are, and then help them through those barriers. A lot of the issues that affect our economy are global macroeconomic forces that we have very little control over. We have to focus on where we have control. That has to do with permitting, zoning, making it easy to do business here, and also in how we sell our community. We have problems. We've talked a lot about them, and we'll continue to talk about them. We have to. But we also have to celebrate our successes. We don't want a mayor who's going to be all doom and gloom and tell you all the reasons why Syracuse is such a bad place. We need to speak to the positives as well. And in taking on that approach and helping businesses grow, the next step is then to connect those people to the businesses. And as much as we talk about looking at transportation options to connect people to jobs, in some cases, we need to look at how we bring the jobs to the people. And I think we have a great opportunity in our neighborhood business districts. We have underutilized industrial building stock that is more conducive now than ever for light manufacturing, for jobs. We need to inventory those properties. We need to sell those properties. We need to bring the jobs to the people to help to deconcentrate poverty.
So, Laura Levine, what's your take on this? I mean, you are the Republican in the race. Do you have a particularly different vision and approach about how to try to get the economy working better here?
Well, I can only guess that when Ben refers to the doom and gloom, he's probably referring to me.
That's true.
I believe that it's important to put the facts out there. He mentions getting all the information out there about Route 81. I get all the information out there about the whole city. We have business owners in the city of Syracuse who can't get work done because people pick fights and there's too much red tape, too much bureaucracy, job-crushing fees and tasks and procedures. There's a business owner on Westcott Street who went from one side of the street to the other. He said, "Laura, all I did was change from selling fish to falafel from one side of the street to the other." It took him 2 years to get a straight answer from City Hall on how to get his business back to where it should be, up and running, so that he was legal. And then when all was said and done, they said they were going to charge him $100 per day fee for the previous 2 years because he hadn't done something right. Who can operate this way? It's just not common sense. If things were all happy and great, you wouldn't hear me putting out all of these facts. But I'm not making up the facts. I'm not making up the data. I'm not creating the lists. We are the worst city for millennials. Highest concentration of poverty among blacks and Hispanics of any city our size. Judge Wilson affirmed that Syracuse students have been deprived of a sound basic education. Put it out there. talk about it. That's not gloom and doom. That's reality. We have to be realistic about what our city is facing, because if we aren't realistic, we're not going to be able to identify how to create a strategic plan, what the goals will be, and how we're going to be accountable for accomplishing the strategic goal.
So let me follow up with you, though. The one specific thing I heard there about what we would do would be to make the city more business friendly in terms of permitting and the regulations. So is there something else other than that you would have in your short-term plan for boosting the economy?
Well, in addition to everything else I've talked about, which is to turn the schools around, and what I've said is if I'm elected mayor, I'll be seeking mayoral control of the school district.
Okay.
That term is off-putting. The word control is off-putting, and I understand that, but that is the term for it. Some people call it mayoral responsibility. Some people call it integrated governance. But what I would be doing is, with the advice and consent of the Common Council, so that there's an assurance of engagement and participation on the part of elected officials, appointing school board members. The way the school board operates right now is that they run on the odd number of years. Four of them ran 2 years ago. This year, the other three are running. There's the potential for approximately 50% turnover of the school board every 2 years and potential for 100% turnover every 4 years. The school board is the key controlling, governing body for a school district. They set policies. They hire superintendents. They weigh on a discipline. Attorney General Schneiderman came in and said, we can't suspend out-of-school disruptive students. But there was no plan in place except for restorative justice. Restorative justice doesn't work for anybody. With mayoral responsibility of the schools, the message is sent to the community. One person, I, will be responsible and accountable for what goes on. I will be able to bring more resources so that the superintendent can do his or her job, and you'll have people on the school board for longer periods of time whose sole purpose in being on the board is to focus on increasing student achievement.
Juanita Perez-Williams, I seem to remember that you have taken issue on the question of the control of the schools, but back to the bigger question
right.
about economic
right.
opportunity and what can the city do with what it has to advance opportunity and to try to boost the economy. Are there things that either Ben Walsh or Laura Levine has said that you would add to or that you would disagree with?
Well, I have been the regional director for Department of Labor for a number of years, and so I know that this is possible. And it's unfortunate that our city has never come up with a jobs plan, that we have never tried to enforce criteria with regard to industry that we have incentivized to come to Syracuse to ensure that we create local jobs, to ensure that we have good-paying jobs with benefits. So I go back to what we've been doing with the Department of Labor and where we've been very successful. First of all, people can look at our unemployment rate. Over the last couple years, under my leadership, we brought it down lower than it was before our recession. And more importantly, we have been matching people in this city with very low skill sets with local employers. We need to focus on the very people that hire, and the city has just not done a good job of that, and I will do that as mayor. We have great small businesses here, from manufacturing to retail, you name it. We have good local industry that with a little support, with their marketing, enhancing their growth, with loans, with grants, we can provide more jobs for people in this city because we know these local businesses hire. We know that they are focused in on employees such as those who have been incarcerated, those who have low skills. They want to put local people to work, and we need to help them. They have great ideas and great ambitions, and we need to stop getting in their way with regard to these issues that have been brought up by my opponents with regard to zoning, or any type of permit concerns. A very good example was Hotel Syracuse. Ed Riley wanted to hire local people, and it was my office that came together with Hotel Syracuse. We ensured that everyone in the city had an opportunity up at front, not waiting for other people to come in from other parts of the city. We created almost 100 local jobs with a business that was inspired to hire local people.
Okay.
We need to keep doing that.
Let me jump in. And Howie Hawkins, is what you're hearing enough on this, or do we need to do something else fundamentally?
Yes, I think we do. Short term, the city has a lot of city-funded jobs, both in city departments and with city contractors. We need to make sure that city residents and minorities are getting their fair share of those jobs. There is an old ordinance from 1973 that monitors minority hiring on contracting. The records haven't been made public since 2008, but up until then, about a quarter of, or black people are getting about a quarter of their proportionate share of those jobs. So we need an equal employment opportunity program that is enforced, monitored, and that's the short term. Longer term is, you know, the big boss isn't coming back. We're not going to be, you know, having Carrier and these big companies come in here and save us. Andres Duaney had a quote, I can't remember exactly, but he basically said, the way you develop now is smart government working with lots of small investors. Now, where I would differ from what I've heard is that rather than trying to give incentives to establish businesses or to attract businesses, the old trickle-down idea that you help them and then they'll create jobs for the working class, we should emphasize those incentives for employee-owned businesses. You can do that with generations of owners that are, you know, ready to move out, cash in, you know, sell it to their workers. The advantage of that program is that the worker owners become, they build assets as well as get a job. And I think that's not just providing a job, so a low-income person at least got an income. You're helping them build wealth. And then as far as the issue of the city being difficult to work with, I mean, one thing I know is they have pre-development meetings where they get all the departments that got to deal with permitting, and then they go away. And then you get bottlenecks in one or another apartments. I think those departments need to meet regularly and just go through a checklist and make sure nothing's being held up.
In case you've just joined us, you're listening to a special edition of the Campbell Conversations on WRVO Public Media, a debate among the four candidates for Syracuse mayor. Laura Levine, you brought up previously the schools and talked a bit about how you would want to assume control as mayor of the school system and why you felt that was important.
While letting the superintendent do the job of running the school district.
Okay, thank you. I want to stick with that general topic of the schools. And first of all, though, for our listeners, although your positions on this have been registered elsewhere, I just think it would help to go down. Juanita Perez Williams, I've already said that I understand you are not for mayoral control, correct? Ben Walsh, is that also your position?
Correct.
Okay. And Howie Hawkins, is that your position too?
Yes, it is.
Okay, so we got that part straight. But Laura Levine, let me come back to you. There's another facet of this that's gotten a lot of discussion in the last several years, and probably prior to that too. It's really the elephant in the room when the quality of the school system comes up for the city, which is this question of a possible countywide school district or expanding the school district in some important way. It obviously had an enormous impact on the discussion that the community had about consolidating governments and the consensus report. How realistic do you think it is to even be thinking about some kind of single school district as a goal down the road, as a place where we are working toward in order to really address this problem? And should the next mayor be thinking about that, be trying to lay the foundation for a more serious discussion about that?
It's completely unrealistic, which is why the consensus report completely ignored the Syracuse City School District, admittedly because it was too difficult a topic. When asked why did you not address the school district, the answer was because it was too difficult. Mayoral responsibility is not connected to political ideology or someone's former profession. It started in Boston. Mayor Bloomberg, who was a Republican, had mayoral control for years, and now Mayor de Blasio is a Democrat, equally eager to retain mayoral controls. Former Mayor Tom Young, 7 years ago, was quoted as saying, it's time for mayoral control of the schools, and Mayor Minor did not pursue it. This is not about political party platforms. If we had an 85% graduation rate and we were inching up toward 90%, if we didn't have the worst SAT scores among 50 upstate school districts, if we didn't have a Syracuse Teachers Union survey, the results of which revealed that 300 teachers reported being assaulted on the job and more than half feel threatened on the job, and 21% of their new teachers teaching from 0 to 5 years leave, in addition to more seasoned veteran teachers, we wouldn't need such bold, decisive action, but we're not in that category.
Well, I'm going to interject because I do want to come back to this question of a countywide district. Ben Walsh, how do you see this? Is this something that the next mayor ought to be thinking about laying the foundations for? Laura Levine obviously thinks the answer to that is no, but how do you see
it? I'm not saying it shouldn't happen. I'm saying it's not going,
going
to happen.
To happen.
It's unreal.
Okay.
You
unrealistic.
Asked your question was, is it realistic? My answer is it's not realistic until we turn it around.
Okay, thank you. Ben Walsh.
I think before we even get to that question and make the mistake that I think has been made with the consensus issue going right to a consolidated city-county government, we have to look first at where are there opportunities to collaborate and to work together. And as mayor, my first step would be to begin engaging in conversations first and foremost with the city school district superintendent, and secondarily with other superintendents in other parts of the county. There are certain partnerships in place that are between school districts. I think we need to explore where there may be more opportunities. You know, this issue of poverty and segregation is largely due to exclusionary zoning in communities out in Onondaga County outside of the city of Syracuse. I think we need to start breaking down some of those barriers, establishing relationships, and through those we might get to a point where we can think about our school districts separately. But right now we're not even at the table. And going back to my earlier point, the first step is to bring people to the table, and that's what I do better than anyone up here.
Howie Hawkins, how do you see this question of a single school district for the county?
I think it's got to be on the agenda. If you want to improve the schools, I mean, this is something we know since Brown v. Board of Education, where you have desegregation by race and class. The lower class kids do better on standardized tests and come up close to the middle class kids. And all the kids do better on things like intellectual self-confidence, creativity, problem solving, teamwork, collaboration, tolerance, empathy. So the argument should be taken from the city to the suburbs is that desegregation and consolidation will be better for your kids as well as our kids. And we had Gerald Grant just passed. He had a book comparing Syracuse and Raleigh, North Carolina, where they have Wake County. They integrate by class, socioeconomic background. And the subtitle of his book is Why There Are No Bad Schools in Raleigh. The rest of the subtitle could have been Why the Syracuse Schools Are Bad. And so I think if we don't address that issue, all the other things, mayoral control, I mean, Philly, Chicago, New York. New York has got the most segregated schools in the country. They've had mayoral control for a long time. That is not the answer. We've got to really get to the issue that Martin Luther King said right here at this university in 1965, if cities like Syracuse up north don't deal with segregation, de facto segregation, he called it, because they're getting rid of Jim Crow segregation in the south, you're going to lose generations of kids. And that's what we have. It's time to face that issue, and I think the argument is strong, and we maybe don't consolidate the whole county, but adjacent school districts, we can start having exchange programs, get confidence in that it's working, and then build out from there. But I think it's an issue that's got to be addressed, and we can't dilly around for another 50 years, or we're just going to lose generations more kids.
Juanita Perez-Williams, is what Howie Hawkins is talking about, a bridge too far for the next mayor?
Well, you know, I think we have to consider what he's saying. I mean, listen, I did not support merging city and county government, and for the same reason I would not support merging of our schools with the city and the county. These entities have different issues. 70% of the kids that go to our schools in the city are living in poverty. You don't have that same element in our county areas. We have different issues that we need to strive to overcome. I very much appreciate the idea that the county is talking about sharing services within our schools. I certainly think we should be looking at that, the ways that we can combine our purchasing or any type of vendor consolidation, I think is something we need to look at. If that saves revenue and if that supports our city schools more, I'm all for it. But at the end of the day, I want to focus on our city schools with the very issues that they have. I have a daughter who's an eighth grade teacher in our city schools, and she tells me every day that the programs, the initiatives, the teachers, the policies, they're all great efforts, but you're dealing with challenges and struggles of the young people in our school systems that need more support. If we were to combine our efforts with the county, would that support be diluted? I think so. And so I want to make sure as a mayor, I'm capturing the very concerns of our families and our children in our city schools and focus on helping them so our teachers can teach, so our administrators can do their jobs, and our families can function.
Laura Levine, I want to give you a chance to come back in and rebut some of the things because you've put forward something quite specific about mayoral control and also said quite flatly that the idea of a greater consolidation is unrealistic for the school system. So do you have a response to what you've heard here that you'd like to put forward?
Families of financial means who are interested in making educational choices for their children often in the city of Syracuse choose to send their children to non-public schools, or they leave the city altogether. I have neighbors who are leaving. They're moving a third of a mile away into the neighboring school district where people are paying upwards of $10,000 over the asking price of houses, and houses are being snapped up in a matter of hours. When people are moving to Central New York, they don't say to the realtor, who has the best hotels downtown? They don't say who has the best roads. They say, who has the best schools and the safest neighborhoods? The answer right now is not Syracuse. It can be, and it should be, and we can do that. But we need somebody who will stand up and say to the entire city of Syracuse, I will be accountable for what goes on here. I'm going to be responsible. I'm going to bring together community leaders, other elected officials at the local, state, and federal level, have access to other financial and human resources to give the school board and the superintendent what's needed to turn the city around, which is to turn the school district around.
Okay, thank you.
But
and
you
Ben,
don't need mayoral control to do that, Laura.
This is Juanita Perez-Williams. Go ahead.
Yeah, you can do that as a mayor that's supporting your superintendent, your teachers, your families. You can do all that you're saying, but you don't have to be a dictator, if you will, running our city schools, because that's what it would appear, and it would appear political. So I agree with you. We do need to do all that, but I would certainly do it in a democratic way where we're bringing all of these people together and making decisions together as opposed to one person doing that.
I'm sure every mayor would say that he or she has supported the city school districts. I personally do not know what support, partner with, or work with sounds like, means, or looks like. We're in dire straits. As I said before, we're not at 85% graduation rate, inching up to 90. We've just moved up to 60%. We're in dire straits. We need bold, decisive action. This is not about being a dictator. This is not about running the schools. We have a superintendent. That's his job. This is about a mayor who's going to say to the entire city, I am telling you that the school district is of paramount importance. I accept it, I acknowledge it, and I'm going to be responsible for it.
Ben Walsh, you want to jump in?
I don't want to belabor the point, but I have to say I'm the only person up here that has a personal interest in my children. My oldest daughter is in the city school district. I set foot in a city school every day of the week when I take my girls to school. And I will tell you that I see firsthand the progress that's being made, the commitment of our teachers, of our administrators. I see firsthand in my regular dealings with our superintendent, Jaime Alcea, who, oh, by the way, is relatively new to the position and has undertaken a pretty amazing healing process within a district that was very divided under the previous administration. Graduation rates are going up. The racial achievement gap has been closed. This is progress. It's not the time to hit the reset button. It's time to double down on what's working. That's what I'm going to do as both mayor and a parent with a child in the district.
All right. Let me go to a different topic now, and we really just have a few minutes left. But I wanted to ask a question about the structure of the political system in the city to the four of you. Citizen frustrations with the political systems that we live under at every level have been rife in recent years, and they only seem to be getting deeper and sharper. So beyond having good working relationships with other public officials, and I guess, Ben Walsh, I'll come back to you with this because you've emphasized this a lot here this evening. Beyond having those good working relationships, do you have any specific changes or reforms in the structure of the city's governing institutions that you would be advocating for and trying to lead for as mayor?
My campaign theme is Rise Above. And it's not just a slogan. It's really a call to action. It's about rising above the partisan politics that divides us as a community, and that's reflected in the existing governance structure. I think by electing an independent mayor who is not beholden to either of the major parties, it puts us in a unique position to bring people together within government and outside of government, where party politics and the influence of party bosses is not a consideration. The only consideration is what's in the best interest of the people. I have a proven track record of doing
that. Let me jump back in. So that's not a structural change, but are there other specific structural changes you'd want to make to the way the city political system works?
I would simply say that whether or not you want to consider it structural, I think that we need to drastically change the way in which we engage citizens in the governance process, from public participatory budgeting processes to getting citizens involved in actual creation of legislation. So my plan is through civic engagement to get the people more directly involved in government.
Howie Hawkins, do you have structural changes that you'd be pushing for as mayor?
Oh, yes. I've been calling for these for years. I mean, first thing is instant runoff voting. The next mayor among the four of us.
And try to be brief here because I want to leave time for the other two candidates.
All right. May be elected with most people voting for somebody else. So instant runoff voting. Proportional representation on council. Right now we have a two-party system with the winner-take-all election system, which incentivizes negative campaigning and basically legislation being rammed through by the majority over the minority. Instant runoff voting and proportional representation will create a multi-party system, as it tends to do around the world. And then you have shifting coalitions depending on the issue. You got to negotiate and compromise, and it doesn't pay to negatively campaign because you look like a jerk as well as the jerk you're trying to knock down. So, and the ones that are positive rise up. We need to strengthen TNT, break them down into smaller units, neighborhood assemblies for neighborhood planning and participatory budgeting, public campaign finance. I mean, my idea of independence is independence from the old money structure, and I would say I'm an independent as well, not being on one of the two major parties. And then community broadband. You know, most cities like ours have their broadband utility providing, you can see the government meetings, the hearings, the school board, the city council. We don't have that. We've been misused and abused by these big telecoms that have not provided us well. We need community broadband to provide that as well as good service, affordable service, and so forth.
There's a lot there to chew on. We've only got a couple minutes left. Juanita Perez-Williams, do you have any structural changes you'd be pushing?
Absolutely, and I've been talking about this in-house type of political process that we have that doesn't provide people a real opportunity to know exactly what we're doing in the city, what plans we have, how we move forward. And so I'm talking about a structure where we're moving from every part of the city when we talk about what's happening in the city, what we talk about, what resolutions are on the table. People can't show up at noon, at 1 o'clock in the afternoon, to make their point or talk about the issues on their very streets. And they don't want to wait for a particular party to tell them at election time what they need to know. So we need to take City Hall and we need to move it around this city, and we need to make sure that it's available and accessible for the many people who have a voice, who don't get an opportunity to be a part of the process, and make sure that they have that. I'm also, you know, going to support the fact that we're trying to get the state to move forward on early voting. We can no longer have a system where we depend on everybody who has working challenges, getting their kids to school, just having access to voting one day for a primary or general election.
Let me jump
we
in
need
there
to move with early voting.
And give Laura Levine the last word. We've got about a minute left. What are your thoughts on
two structural changes right off the bat? I would be combining the industrial development agencies, the city and the county, into one. I would also, as I've already called for, seek legislation and enact a banning of pay-to-play. Not only would I not be beholden to party leaders, I also would not be beholden to wealthy developers donating thousands of dollars in cash to my campaign.
1 second to respond to that. I'm guessing that's directed to you, Ben Walsh. Go ahead.
I believe it is. I have more individual donors than any other candidate. Approximately 10% of my donors come from quote-unquote developers. I'm proud that I'm receiving my input or my support from local people.
We'll have to leave it there. You've been listening to a debate among the four candidates for mayor of the city of Syracuse. The election is November 7th. If you've missed any part of this debate or would like to re-listen to it, you can find it online at wrvo.org. I want to thank the candidates for participating, Laura Levine, Howie Hawkins, Juanita Perez-Williams, and Ben Walsh. Thanks to all of you.
Thank you.
Thank you.
And thanks again for tuning in to WRVO Public Media.